Hey everybody, this is John Fusco, and you're listening to the No Film School podcast. It's hard to coin Steven Yeun's year as quote-unquote breakthrough, since the South Korean actor has been a figure in the public's eye since his first appearance as Glenn from AMC's The Walking Dead in 2010. But with starring roles in both Boots Riley's Sorry to Bother You and Chang Dong Lee's Burning in 2018, he has all but cemented himself as a leading man on the independent film scene. It's been a long road to get to this point. In the years between the role that made him famous and now, Yeon found himself on set feeling more like a placeholder than an actual human being. As we discuss in our interview, however, growth comes from self-motivation. For him, this meant taking on meatier projects and ignoring those that were nothing more than a nice paycheck. The realization that no one was going to have the answers to questions about his career, combined with an opportunity to work with two visionary directors, put Yeon in a prime position to succeed. His chilling performance in Burning, a film based on a Murakami story about an eccentric millionaire with a deadly secret, is indeed one of the best of the year. Yeon and I sat down at the New York Film Festival, where we talked best practices for actors looking to succeed and how directors can help to support them. Hey guys, this is John Fusco, and I'm here with Steven
Yeon.
Yeon.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We're here to talk about, your year, I guess, not just Burning, which I saw at New York Film Festival about a week ago, but I think that, this year has been a really impressive year for you.
Oh, thanks.
Just in terms of, the roles that we've seen you in, both, very cool roles, I think, I mean?
Thanks. All right, cool.
For me, it's I think that a lot of our listeners will know you best as your role from The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. But these roles are sort of more, I wouldn't say important, but they're meatier.
Sure, yeah.
And the films themselves have been important, I think, this year.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thanks.
It's not really a breakout year in the sense of, you're already an established actor. But would you say that this has been a breakout year in any other way in terms of the performances you've been able to give?
I suppose I can't ignore that. I feel like, if I'm going to be very honest, I feel like I've reset in that way. Our business is also a business, and so people kind of want you to keep pushing the buttons that you're used to pushing. And I remember being done on the show and really wanting to experience something else, stretch and grow as I felt like I was doing as a person. And so I got really lucky that these two projects kind of came my way and I got to be part of them. And so, I don't know if there was cognizant approach to be ooh, I'm gonna reinvent or anything.
Right.
It was more just those were the two things that were attractive to me, and I knock on wood, man. I'm very lucky that way.
Yeah. Well, I think I don't know. There's something about these two movies in particular, and these directors I think that you worked with as well. Can you talk a little bit about working with both Boots Riley and Lee Chang Dong this year? And what that did to sort of accelerate your growth or help you find that you were reinventing yourself?
Right. I think what you might be zeroing in on is human, in that way. It's, I think what Boots and Director Lee gave me the ability to do was, or a chance to experience was, what it's like to be a character that is a full person, a full human. And that doesn't mean that these other roles weren't. It just kind of means that the other roles were meant to, there was a thing greater than them about them. Mm-hmm. It wasn't them. It wasn't the character that was kind of the core. It was really the archetype or the ideal or the thing that film needed or that project needs in that moment, whether it's comic relief or whether it's tech guy, or whether it's the moral compass, or whether there's always something greater about these people.
It's almost like there's one thing in particular that you're there to serve.
To serve, yeah. Yes. And those are awesome too, because those feel like a director's vision that's doing something greater. You know, I think director Bong plays that way. I think Okja was that way, where he doesn't delineate and say like you can only be your archetype, but he wants to paint a larger canvas and he wants to have these different colors a part of it. Whereas I think Boots and director Lee kind of gave me the space to go, this is who you are in our society. In this instance, in Sorry to Bother You, you're a union organizer, Salt. Go make this person be a person. With director Lee, with Burning, he was like, this is the parameters by which you live as a human. Go do this person. And those are very subtle and different things, but or subtle things, but there's a large difference between the two. You feel motivated and empowered to just kind of be free to be your character in the latter, and in the former, you're really kind of calculating what the overall goal is and what you intend and need to be for it. I'll let this pass. I don't know too. I mean, I think I got to be honest with myself and say maybe I was more mature to understand how I could do that for myself too in these latter films. Whereas before, I don't know if I knew to even try to approach something that way.
So how did you approach, like, now that you were given this sort of free rein, I guess, to play, I guess, within your character, within this person, how did you approach your sort of, I guess, like, your background work before you went in your character work?
I have an incredible acting coach. Her name is Deb Aquila, and she's, can I swear on this?
Yeah.
She's a fucking genius. She's a genius. And you know, we did just a lot of research together. We talked a lot. And what's really great is we talked about deeper layered ideas. I think we could have easily just stopped at, what does this character sound like? What does he look like? What does he wear? How does he walk? What, you know, but we really skipped all that stuff and we just got to, like, what are the, why is this person still alive and breathing? What motivates this person to get up every day and decide to take another crack at life? Those were, I think, questions that maybe I was not wise enough to ask on my own in prior things. And this, in this instance, Deb really helped me navigate those things. And then these experiences and then the freedom from the directors to play within that framework really allowed me to feel free and supported that whatever I did is whatever I will do and whatever the character's doing. And so, yeah, it was just a very different approach. And it was, in my opinion, a more mature approach that came from the fact that I had a little experience under my belt. And also, you know, post Walking Dead, it wasn't scary, but it was lonely.
But,
Yeah. You know, and I don't mean like, oh, I felt lonely. I don't have friends or anything like that. I was surrounded by, you know, my wife and my family. It was all great. But I think it was, you know, kind of becoming 30 and realizing that you are responsible for you and you are responsible for you on the inside and on the outside. And, you know, all the decisions that are made for you when you're younger or things that people tell you you're supposed to do, those are all well and good because they have good intentions, hopefully. But when you are an adult, like, it's on you.
Yeah.
And I think that was a really good turning point for me, too.
Yeah, it seems like growth really stems from self-motivation. You know?
For sure, yeah. And it just accepting the fact that no one's going to tell you the answers.
Right.
Because there aren't any. it's specific to you. Yeah. So, yeah, that was really cool.
Did you ever have like sort of a problem shedding that Walking Dead character? Like in, within the industry, was there a lot of like, you know, it's almost like a child star getting known for one role,
sure,
sort of thing,
yeah.
You know, and then.
I think that character still precedes me pretty heavy in the more public eye.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, work-wise, people weren't trying to have me do the same role, but I think, you know, progress is slow, and progress requires a lot of action, so you can't really rely on others to give that to you, you know? So, yeah, I just decided, okay, then I just gotta do it on my own, whatever that means. Even saying no to things or taking a risk and just kind of like seeing what's out there, prying where I'm not supposed to pry, things like that. And luckily, films like this kind of came my way, and I was able to explore the feelings that I was feeling.
I think like it's interesting that you say, you know, saying no to projects that you think might be risky, because it feels like you're in a couple of like risky projects.
Oh, I meant risky like you need to make money to live.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like saying right. No to a project like that's having the balls to say no to a project that's set up to say like, hey, I'm going to pass on this even though it's set up.
Mm-hmm.
For potential success, but it's not the thing that I want to explore right
gotcha,
now.
Gotcha.
But yeah, like I'm all about risky stuff. Yeah. That sounds cool.
I mean, yeah, let's talk. Did you think that Burning would have the sort of reception that it's gotten when you took the project?
I didn't think that far ahead. The thing that I definitely knew was that Director Lee is a master filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to be part of his work.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's kind of what led for me. You know, I when you get to work with a director like him, there's almost no fear because you're like, you're not going to stop until you get the performance that you want. So mm-hmm. Why fight it? Just keep going until we get it. And, that was really wonderful. So yeah, I think I didn't think about what could happen, but I definitely was cognizant that I was working with an incredible filmmaker.
Did you were you influenced by him growing up? I know you grew up for a short time in South Korea before mm-hmm. moving to America, but
you know, I didn't. Well, when I was there, his films didn't exist yet.
Yeah.
But when I first saw some of his, I saw Poetry first, I believe. And then I went back and watched Secret Sunshine, Oasis, and Peppermint Candy. Man, Peppermint Candy fucked me up.
Did it change? It sort of changed your artistic direction in any way, or like was it one of those things that maybe ended up influencing your need for growth? I guess.
Yeah, I think Peppermint Candy, as an immigrant man from Korea who feels the collective weight of oppression that Korean culture has experienced throughout its history, and how that passes down through generations. I felt it, but could never explain it because I never knew the context by which it was formed or created. And, you know, Korean men of that later generation, of that, you know, long ago generation, never was really taught how to process or talk about those feelings. And so I wasn't even able to necessarily ask my dad about what these feelings were, why I had this, you know,
burning
or anger
yeah.
or rage.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you watch Peppermint Candy, you're like, oh, okay. Like that's what that is. That's what happens. And I think that's kind of a similar experience for a lot of Korean Americans or Koreans that watch that film. And I think that, you know, that's the beauty of Director Lee's work is he's able to turn a mirror to society and just and show people how ugly it can look. And people don't do that often, you know, and they're not brave enough to do that and do it well sometimes. And so, yeah, I mean, Director Lee, he's great, man. Great.
How about Murakami? Are you a Murakami?
Yeah, I'm a Murakami fan.
Yeah.
I think Murakami for me lies more in an aspirational world where I don't know what that world necessarily is like. A Murakami world seems very, while accessible to some degree because it's human, it's sometimes inaccessible because it's in some ways very nouveau riche, I guess. It's privileged. Mm. A lot of his characters, it seems, they kind of live in a nice place and they do nice things and whatnot. But yeah, I think that, you know, I'm a big Murakami fan, but what was really great was the juxtaposition of Director Lee's approach to the source material.
Right. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like how he was able to adapt this and like what, I mean, yeah. It's hard to speak for him, I'm sure, but like what that process might've been like.
Well, he worked with this great writer. He normally writes his own stuff, but he worked with this wonderful writer named Oh Jung-mi, and she is, I think, kind of a protege of his, and she's wonderful. And they really broke open this story. But Director Lee also is a novelist himself, and so he's well versed in literature, and the understanding that this man has, and the depth to which he has of life, literature, all that stuff. I think that's why you see an adaptation such as this that feels very much in line with his Murakami's voice.
Yeah.
And you know, this is all conjecture. This is me completely making this up for myself. But I feel like the reason why the adaptation feels right is because Director Lee is in some ways commenting on Murakami while making his a film based on a short story. So like the fact that Faulkner is in this film is in some way a comment about Murakami. Barn Burning by Murakami was a play off of Faulkner's Barn Burning, which is a totally different class struggle. Faulkner's Barn Burning is about working man, and it's kind of the father's storyline that Chungzu has to deal with, where the father keeps kind of fucking up because he can't let go of this rage that he feels for authority and those above him, and he keeps putting his family in this situation. There's that through line. But then there's this other through line that is more reflective of Murakami, which is where Ben lives, where he's able to have these fine things and he can live in a place where these common, more basic necessities are taken care of. And so he's able to self-actualize, you know? And I think that juxtaposition was incredibly important and intelligent, and I think that's the approach by which Director Lee was able to, you know, take this in the right way.
Absolutely. Did you, like, is there any other sort of things that Director Lee would do for, I'm sure there's a ton for you in terms of your relationship as actor director that really, like, good for you, you know what I mean? Like, were like indispensable for you in a way, things that you'd like to see again and again in relationships with directors in the future?
Man, I don't know if I can hold people to his standard, not his self-imposed standard, but to the standard that he set, in my eyes. He's just wise. He's a very wise man. I guess very simply, you know, he knows when to hold him and he knows when to fold him. And, that is kind of indispensable. I never saw him lose it. I never saw him break. He was just steady, even, and you were just looking for his okay at the end of each take, because that's when you knew you got it. And You know, I also like, you know, him and Director Bong are incredible. They edit as they go.
Wow.
And you see the edit right after you do it. And so that comes definitely from a deep, deep knowledge and understanding of filmmaking.
Yeah.
So again, like, I don't know if I can hold people to that standard, but that was really great for me because that means I just was part of this ride and I just had to deliver to him whatever I was intended to do, what I intended to deliver. And so, I don't know if there's like explicit things that I can, I think each experience is going to be different.
Sure.
He definitely gave me the freedom to explore. He gave me the freedom to call shots for my own character in some way. He molded me in some ways, and in other ways, he just let me be free and let me surprise him. And he also opened the door for me to kind of discuss things with him. You know, we had our fair share of differences, not ever to anything more than just a difference of opinion, but that was really great. I think as a Korean American, you can enter into a Korean film and be really worried that you have to play by the social rules that Korean society also imposes, which is if they're older than you, if they're more experienced than you, if they're in a higher position than you, you kind of just give it to that person. But he never let me feel the weight of that. He just was like, you are here to do this job as well as I am, so let's collaborate. And I think that's how he always kind of approaches film. And that's what was a really wonderful experience for me.
That's such an interesting like insight for all, like all directors, you know, like this this Korean standard that you talk about, and how like breaking that, because directors in general can take that stance where they're like, you know, I am ruling with an iron fist here. You must do what I am telling you to do.
Right.
So I guess to wrap things up here. I would have loved to get more into your backstory about how you became an actor and like what, you know, it took to break through in your first breakthrough. But if you could just give, I guess, one like piece of golden advice, your golden nugget of advice for actors, I think, trying to make work like you've made this year and even like break through like you did, what would it be?
It's a ride, and I think you know when you're doing it well or doing it in the right direction when you're able to assess your own ego. That's been my biggest struggle, and I don't mean ego in the colloquial sense of like feeling full of yourself, but I mean like ego in the sense that you really got to just let go to the process sometimes. And you got to put in the work, and that's where your ego will drive you to be like, I don't want to fail. I want to succeed. I want to do a good job. And you'd make all those preparations. But then when you're there, you just got to let it go. And that's kind of that collaborative thing that I was talking about, which was, it wasn't, he was like, do it again. Or he would say like, that's not the take. And I think an older or younger me would have taken those things personally and said, tell me what you want. I'll do the thing that you want. But he doesn't want that. Yeah. He doesn't want a wooden performance.
Yeah.
And it took kind of a little bit of a wisdom to and a comfort in myself. And I think that's really key, is just be comfortable with yourself. To know that, like, yeah, like, your note here has nothing to do with me. We're all here to build the same thing. So let's do it again. As opposed to, why does this person keep telling me to do it different?
Right.
That's not how I think. It's kind of just go with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's case by case. Just as much as you have to absolve your ego, the director has to absolve his ego. But that's kind of the game here, in some ways. And so, or that's like the lower, like the level, deeper level game that's happening.
It allows, that's what allows you to like kind of break through like to the actual work.
Yes.
It's the game that you need to either put aside or embrace.
Yes. To like no, yes. To that level. No one to use it, and then know when to let it go.
Yeah.
And that's hard, man.
Yeah. All right.
So, yeah, good luck.
Well, thanks, Stephen. It's been a pleasure.
Appreciate it. Yeah, thanks, man.
We'll talk to you later.
Thanks for listening. Burning is in theaters now. And as always, please subscribe to the No Film School podcast and give us a nice rating if you enjoy what you're hearing. I'm John Fusco. You can follow me on Twitter at @Jim_John_Jim. And be sure to tune in on Thursday for Indie Film Weekly. Until then.